So just a message.
Okay.
Poland should help if you go too long.
Yep. We're actually
Amanda?
Meeting with Donna Victoria today.
That's your book? Okay.
And then we're doing proposals for the three other ones.
Okay.
Do you like that?
I would go with.
Oh, really?
Well, let's do this. Well, I'd like to welcome everybody today here today for our Education Subcommittee on Student Transportation. We've got a couple members that are coming, but I feel that we better get going. We're about 15 minutes after, so. Thanks for coming, and I hope to cover some very important ground on student safety today, looking at bus inspections and bus driver licensing. So our first testifier will be Captain Ken Erhart from the Minnesota State Patrol. We maybe could have shortened the table up.
Morning, Senators, members. My name is Ken Erhart. I'm a captain with the State Patrol. I wear a couple different hats when it comes to the school bus safety program. I'm the designee for the commissioner as the pupil transportation safety director for school bus safety, and I also am the commander of the State Patrol's district that has the school bus inspectors assigned to it. Give you a little background about our school bus inspection program. Presently, we have 12 inspectors assigned to strictly inspect school buses throughout Minnesota. And our mandate by statute is to inspect each and every bus and or Type 3 vehicle that's used to transport children every year to ensure that the vehicles are in good, safe working order. And what we do to identify that is once we conduct the inspection, we put what we call an annual decal on the vehicle that is a visual reference to show us on the roadside that the vehicle has a current inspection. To give you an idea about how many vehicles we're looking at out there, roughly it's about 13,000 vehicles, and they're broken down between five different categories, type A, B, C, D, and then the type 3s. What a type 3 is, that can range anywhere from basically a van to a taxi cab to possibly even a parent that's contracted by the school district to transport kids to and from the district. So all those vehicles are subject to our inspection. Endorsed drivers that actually have school bus endorsements. Now, that endorsement's required for most school buses, but it's not required for the type 3s. So if you are that parent transporting kids to school or you're that contractor that drives a van, your driver is not subject to the commercial driver's license or the school bus endorsement. Roughly, there's about a little more than 19,000 drivers in Minnesota that possess valid school bus endorsements, to give you a rough idea, throughout Minnesota. Whether or not they're all actively driving school buses, I don't know that. One of the other duties we're required to perform by statute is a post-crash inspection involving school buses. And there are certain standards that are placed on that. For instance, there's a certain dollar amount of damage that the bus needs to attain in a crash for the inspection to be required, or a personal injury, or the driver needs to be cited. There are certain standards in the law. Generally, we'll inspect all school buses involved in crashes where we get a request by a local agency or a sheriff's department. If they ask us to inspect the bus, we will do that when we have personnel available. There are times I can tell you that we don't have personnel available to inspect that bus, and we may have to get to the vehicle at a later date or a later time when we have folks that are available. Because geographically, when it comes to the number of personnel we have available 24/7, sometimes that bus has to be quarantined, as we'll call it, at a location until we can get there. So basically, we're also responsible for a number of educational factors, a model school bus driver evaluation, which we have on our website, and we do provide educational support to the industry. Just recently, under the commissioner's signature, we sent out a safety brochure, if you want to call it that, reminding the school bus drivers of their responsibilities and the law that they operate under. And we mailed that independently to every endorsed school bus driver in Minnesota. And what we're trying to do is remind them of those things that are important to keep those children safe when they're transporting them to and from school. But basically, in a nutshell, that's what our responsibilities are as of today. And if you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer those.
Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, Officer, could you please get us a copy of that report? A copy of that letter?
The brochure, Senator? Yes, I'd be happy to do that.
Thank you.
Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Captain Urquhart, do you have any recommendations to improve safety in Minnesota?
Yes. There's a number of issues that we have discussed within our department and also with our federal commercial vehicle safety colleagues at the USDOT. One of the issues we're truly concerned about is the drivers of those Type 3 vehicles. At present, other than having a valid Class D driver's license and having their license checked once a year, they really aren't required to have any other standards compared to a school bus driver that may drive a Type A. For instance, the school bus endorsement, drug and alcohol testing to ensure that they don't have problems with impairment, background checks, physical qualifications. So basically what we have is we have some folks transporting kids to and from school, and because of the type of vehicle they're driving, they're not subject to some of the regulations that drivers are subject to because they drive the big yellow buses. So we're truly concerned about that. Our feeling is that if you're transporting a child to school, to and from school, other than the parent or that private situation, and you're doing that under contract for the school district, you should be subject to some of those qualifications.
And Mr. Chair, Captain, how many drivers would be in that category, and what would your estimate be on the number of students affected?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, roughly in 2006, we estimated about 2,400 drivers operate Type 3s. Or there's about 2,400 Type 3 buses. As far as how many of those drivers are out there operating those, there could be at least that many or more or less. So as far as how many of those folks are doing that, we don't have contact with those drivers. We are required to inspect their vehicles, but we don't see the folks that drive the school buses. Just so you know, when we go to, for instance, in my school district where I live and my children attend in Forest Lake, which is a school district-operated fleet, when my inspectors go to that school district bus garage and we inspect their buses, the drivers are not with the buses. We're looking at only buses. And generally the way it works is that the maintenance folks will operate the vehicle for us and we'll inspect the vehicles in a team concept, generally two inspectors, bus after bus after bus after bus. The contact with the drivers only comes if we happen to do some unannounced checks at the schools when they're waiting to pick up children, or we catch the bus coming back to that facility after they've dropped those kids off. We do not interdict school bus drivers on the route unless we absolutely see some real safety reason to do that, because we don't want to delay those kids from getting delivered to school or home again. So the numbers of those Type 3 drivers, I can only give you a guess, Senator.
Any other, Mr. Chair, Captain, any other recommendations? And on that initial one and any others, have you asked the administration to propose that as legislation?
At this point in time, Senator, Mr. Chairman, we have not talked to the administration about that specific issue. What we have looked at is the whole concept of how we do our school bus inspections and the mandate that we're under. We would really like to see a more flexible program. And what I mean by that is we want to continue to look at buses, the vehicles. But we really like to have a balanced performance-based program where we're looking at not only the vehicles but the drivers that operate those vehicles. I mean, in an ideal situation, we'd like to go to that Forest Lake school bus garage and look at a percentage of their fleet on any given day, unannounced, and also talk to the drivers that operate those vehicles on a regular basis instead of just looking at school buses. And as a follow-up, I'm willing to put together a number of what we'll call background on serious school bus incidents that we've had in the last 5 years, and I'm talking about fatal crashes, impaired drivers, background issues, and those kinds of things to give you an idea of where we're seeing the real problems. And we're not seeing a lot of problems with vehicles contributing to these incidents. It's the human factor we're concerned about, whether it's the driver or the philosophy the driver is employed under.
And I think this is the intent of this committee, is that, you know, you guys are the ones that are working every day inspecting these buses, and you see the conditions, and you're the expert, so any recommendations you have, I think that's kind of what we're looking for. So I really appreciate that, and I look forward to seeing that. Any other questions?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator
Thank you,
Bonoff.
Mr. Chair. Captain Eckhart, my constituents come to me from time to time and talk about seatbelts, and I know I've sat in our committee hearings and have heard testimony why the buses are actually made a little bit differently than a normal vehicle, and so that the kids are kept in place and that it's okay that they don't have seatbelts. Do you concur with that, and do the other type vehicles, are any of them equipped with seatbelts, and what's your view on that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, presently, if the buses are equipped with seatbelts in Minnesota, the children are required to wear them. So if they're sitting in that seat with a safety restraint system, they're required to utilize that. A good example of that was the bus crash in Minneapolis the other day, where the little ones, the preschool ones, were wearing the four-point restraint system. And I think if you saw some feedback from that incident,
that was the school we were at.
There was a... From what I could see, there were no serious injuries involved in that crash. There's a lot of tails to this issue, and our concern with the whole safety restraint system in the school bus is the responsibility. Who's responsible to ensure the children wear these things properly? We know they're going to wear them when they're on the bus, but are they wearing them properly? And who's going to be responsible for that? Because if we end up with a situation where we can't enforce it, or we can't do anything about the improper use or no use on the bus, then what have we accomplished? And there are other issues I think the industry would probably like to talk about that are not safety related, but they there's costs to that, and transportation costs and occupancy issues and things like that. But obviously, safety restraints do keep the child in the seat where they belong. If the bus is designed to have those, then I think it's a good thing.
Good. Thank you. Now, I have some questions that I would like to ask, too. You answered one about the number of inspectors today is 12. But I would expect these answers maybe at a future meeting. How many commercial vehicle inspectors did we have 10 years ago, 5 years ago, and today? And so that's one of the numbers that I don't expect you to have that at the top of your head.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, the highest number of inspectors we've ever had dedicated to the school bus inspection program, to my knowledge, is 15, and we were at that number probably at your 5-year mark. And since that time, we have what I'll call an aging group of inspectors. A lot of them have been around for more than 35 years, and including Sergeant Bartles, the supervisor of that group, and they're starting to retire and leave. And we've replaced three inspectors that have left in the last 18 months. So we basically, what we've done is we've moved inspectors from other duties to ensure that we get these school buses inspected. You know, I've talked to the industry about what our challenges were going to be with staffing. We're continuing to do those inspections in the same process that we've used in recent years. So we're meeting the challenge, if that answers your question, Senator.
Well, in a way it does, but I think I was asking in more of a global perspective on the whole commercial vehicle industry, because it sounds to me almost like you're maybe pulling some of the commercial vehicle inspectors from the truck side to maybe look at the buses, and I don't know. But so that's one. So I'd like the number of commercial vehicle inspectors altogether.
I can give you that, Mr. Chairman. From my knowledge, the top number of commercial vehicle inspectors we had in our organization at any one time was approximately in the mid-90s. We're now down to about, we're in the high 60s now. So we've seen a significant reduction in the number of inspectors. We are in the process of hiring. We hired 6 new inspectors this summer. We're in the process right now of hiring 7 more inspectors. And the directive I've been given is that we're going to be able to maintain our fiscal year 07 levels in the future here, at least the immediate future in the next during this biennium. So we are hiring some folks, and this is the first time we've been able to hire in the last 6 years, roughly. So we're bringing some more people on board, but we're certainly not going to be up to the numbers we were at one time.
Well, thank you. Another question I have is, how many district troopers are crash certified?
I assume so.
Mr. Chairman, to give me some idea, are you talking about the post-crash?
Yes.
To do these post-crashes?
Yes.
Well, there's 27 troopers in our division that are committed to, including myself, that are committed to commercial vehicle enforcement and education and investigation, and then those 60-some inspectors. We're all certified to inspect commercial vehicles, including school buses, and conduct those post-crashes. So we can all do that. I don't personally go out in the field and do post-crash inspections, but I do commercial vehicle inspections to maintain my certification. So there's roughly almost 100 of us throughout the state. In addition to that, outside of our division, we have about 25 troopers that are trained to do commercial vehicle inspections, and they're somewhere in the process for us to certify them to do the post-crashes. We also have some local officers, and there's about 18 of those that are trained to do commercial vehicle inspections. And they cannot do post-crash inspections because statutorily those need to be done by the state patrol. So we do train some other agencies to do commercial vehicle inspections.
Thank you. How many outside agencies, I think what you are alluding to, local police agencies, are trained to do the inspections? So I think you maybe just answered that one for me.
Yes, we have about 18 officers from various agencies, sheriff's departments, local agencies. We even had some folks from some of the Native American police agencies that were interested. So whoever comes to our door has a real interest and is willing to partner with us, we will train them.
And then I think you answered my last question, which was how many school bus inspectors. I have 12 today. One of the things I'm concerned is that I see transportation miles increasing, not decreasing, and our number of inspectors seem to be dropping. And I think it's important when we talk about maybe your wish list of how you would revamp this to provide a more safer system for our students. You know, I guess ultimately when you're hopefully drawing this up, you'll include what number of inspectors you think would be a better number, because throughout the state, 12 seems like a pretty low number to me. I don't know what your opinion is on that, but if it needs more funding, I think it's maybe your job to tell us what you need and our job to maybe try and find that funding.
Yes, Senator. Just to give you a rough idea, when you look at the school bus inspection workload, if we have 12 inspectors, they're each performing, you know, on the average, more than 1,000 school bus inspections a year. And logistically, if you look at, for instance, I'll give you an example of the Northwest team. Those two inspectors that are up in the Erskine area, their geographical area is quite large. So they spend a lot of time trying to get to that small bus operation that may only have a couple buses, to get those buses inspected, and if they don't pass, they have to return. So sometimes they're putting on hundreds of miles a day just to get to a location. And that is a real challenge for us. So we're trying to logistically do a better job of providing service to the industry, and rather than maybe send the team, we send one inspector or separate them and send them in opposite directions. But it is a challenge for them just to get to some of these locations to inspect these vehicles.
So I guess in this report that will be seen in the future, maybe I appreciated what you said about being able to do not only the inspections but look at the drivers too. So that just tells me that that would need more personnel to do something like that too. So
Yes, Mr. Chairman, possibly if we're going to continue to look at every bus every year, we would have to add personnel to add some of these other activities. If we modify the inspection process and change the requirement, maybe we could do it with more or less some existing personnel. But it all depends on the system we have to operate in.
I had been kind of looking. I believe you spoke to us during committee about looking at going to maybe the inspections being done internally by some of the bus mechanics and those kinds of things. And I was kind of going down that road, but one of our later testifiers has changed my mind on that. So, and I think he'll be addressing that later. So I guess under that circumstance, I'm looking forward to you telling us what you would need in resources to do a job to improve this job the best way we can. I know we can't guarantee 100% safety, but if it's more on the human side maybe than the bus side, you know, looking at the drivers, whatever you recommend, I think it's important that we would hear that.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we'll provide you with that.
Okay, any other questions? Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Captain Eckhart, do you charge fees to the bus companies at all to offset any of the expenses? So, for example, are the private companies assessed any fee to cover the cost of the inspections, or are you funded strictly by the general fund? How does that work?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, our folks are primarily funded through Trunk Highway that are involved in the school bus inspections. We do not offset any costs with any fees. All the services we provide to the industry is at no cost to them.
Well, any other questions? Well, with that, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One other thing, I have those brochures for you if you'd like to look at those.
While those are being passed out, our next testifier will be Chuck Holden, who's Director of Administrative Services with Anoka Hennepin Schools.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. Chuck Holden, Director of Administrative Services, Anoka Hennepin Schools. Previously, just quick historical information, the transportation director for Anoka Hennepin Schools for the past 20 years. Prior to that, worked for contract school bus companies for 10 years, and prior to that, was a teacher. About 30 years experience in the transportation industry, primarily from the contract bus company perspective from a number of years ago, in the past 20 years from a school district that contracts for service, Anoka Hennepin being the largest district in the state and currently running 357 contracted school buses.
Mr. Holden, would Mr. Paulson like to join you at the table?
Yes.
Sorry about that.
I would like to introduce my replacement as of this summer. Mr. Keith Paulson replaced myself when Tom Duran, who was our Director of Administrative Services, is now the Assistant Secretary of State. So I assumed his position in charge of facilities and support services. And we were fortunate to get Mr. Paulson to work for us this summer. And he comes from South Washington County schools, where he had 22 years experience. So I told Mr. Paulson I would testify because I have a little more historical information on our school district. He's fairly new, but he's getting his feet wet every day. My testimony primarily is on the bus inspection process that the captain was speaking to and your questions related to. I've seen in the 30 years transportation industry a lot of change, and the captain and all of his inspectors, who I have a great deal of respect for, has mentioned, and he mentioned again today, that the bus drivers are more the issue than the buses. But I've been around long enough to know and see the other side of that perspective. In the 70s, buses were the problem and drivers were also the problem. In fact, I was employed taken from teaching and took a position training bus drivers, writing curriculum, having classroom and behind-the-wheel training, because many bus companies were struggling to insure their buses. Many crashes, many problems with bus drivers, as well as buses. We had buses going down the road with kingpins falling out and all kinds of problems, and really the system that we have today on bus inspections evolved from that situation. And in my estimation, one of the biggest improvements in school bus safety in Minnesota was when we went to an inspection process that pitted especially contract bus companies as well as school districts against each other in a competitive nature to improve their bus fleets. And that's been going on for a number of decades. And actually, when I was working for contract bus companies, doing contract management, I would use our inspection results as a competitive edge in bid processes with school districts to lay our fleet against another fleet and compare safety ratings. So what developed over the years was a system that if you wanted to stay in the business contracting school buses, you had the safest fleet you could possibly have and the minimal number of point deductions on the scale. So when the captain, and I know the issue, I know staffing, I know the number of inspectors has been depleted, and I totally agree with his assertion that we need to spend a lot of time looking at drivers, looking at licensing, looking at schools, doing spot random inspections, and agree with all of those things, but not, in my estimation, at the expense of our inspections that has really resulted in a safer bus fleet in the state. I would personally like to see the number of inspectors increase to the point where some of the staff or Department of Public Safety could do some of these other things, but we could continue with our annual inspection. I felt that way last year, and I felt that way fairly strongly, but it was really cemented after we had, as many of you are aware, a very serious crash, probably the most serious crash in Anoka Hennepin's history in 57 years, and certainly the most serious crash I've been involved in as a transportation director, and that was the Ham Lake crash, where a bus, allegedly the brakes failed, driver was not able to stop, students were airlifted and taken medevac from the scene, and very serious injuries. Subsequent to that crash, and the captain's team was on site, my estimation did just an exemplary job of controlling the scene and working with the school district and parents in subsequent meetings to look at how we could improve things, look at the cause, and really the statement from the captain to a group of about 200 parents at McKinley Elementary maybe 3 weeks after the crash is what really cemented my feelings on having state inspectors and having that objective law enforcement view of the situation. When parents were very skeptical of putting their students back on buses after that crash. We've got a contract company and we've got brake problems on the bus. And really when the captain and his crew stood up and said, this was the problem, it's been addressed, we've talked to the bus company, the mechanics, they've made the corrections, and the buses in Anoka Hennepin are safe. These buses are safe to put your children back on. So that credibility factor, having the captain there and the Department of Public Safety and the inspectors and making those statements, you could almost feel the pressure in the room kind of deplete because parents felt assured by that. And I try and imagine that if we don't have law enforcement, the Department of Public Safety involved in those inspections, and having the head mechanic for the bus company who made the repairs to the brake system stand up in front of these parents and say the same thing, I don't think it would have the same result. So after that incident last December, I've got pretty strong feelings that I think that the captain and his staff do an excellent job, that they're understaffed. We need either a different funding stream or a way to improve that system and add inspectors and do the things that he's identified as additional needs, looking at driving records, doing spot inspections at schools. I totally agree that bus drivers need to be monitored and inspections also need to continue to take place. So those are my comments, and I'll stand for any questions.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Holden, thank you for coming and testifying. Just in your comments about the crash that you experienced last December, you said there was allegedly a brake failure. What was the cause as it was finally determined? What was the cause of the accident?
Connecting rod, and actually the investigators are here. They could give you probably more details, but the connecting rod, an aftermarket rod put into a brake cylinder or a brake head that was not a factory installed rod.
And Mr. Chairman, so Mr. Holden, what the part that was used to do a repair, which was believed to be adequate for the purpose, turned out to not be. Is that kind of that you're using a replacement part that was new but just not of the right specification? Is that kind of the idea of what was the cause?
Basically, Senator, yes.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Holden. So then the school district or the contract bus service, what they've done is they've specified using some other kind of part in that type of repair. Is that?
Yes, exactly, Senator. Subsequent to the crash, we immediately talked to the bus company and had them pull in every bus that had that type of brake system and review those and make recommendations on any other buses of a similar chassis and brake hydraulic brake system that they had in the fleet. And the State Patrol came in and basically said, if you've got any buses that you've done this procedure to and changed out these parts, they're grounded, they're out of service until those parts are replaced. And that was done before any of those buses were put back in service. And I believe we had 10 or 12 of those buses.
Okay. And Mr. Chairman and Mr. Holden, thank you. One last question. Do you have or could you provide to our committee some trend data over time from your district, just the kinds of safety issues or accidents or other kinds of problems maybe over some period of time so we can get a context for whether what we're experiencing currently is better, worse, about the same? Have things changed? If so, have they gotten better or worse? Is there some data that you might have that could be helpful for us as we look at this issue?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Hahn, we do have that information. I can forward that to you. But just anecdotal comment, we've seen a real decrease in the number of crashes. In fact, this particular crash, Kottke's Bus Company in Andover, was the worst in the history of that company and the only serious crash that we've experienced with them. And we've seen a trend where our crashes are decreasing every year. But I can certainly provide that information.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Mr. Paulson, I know you're just starting your position with Anoka-Hennepin. Do you have anything else to add?
I just started, and so almost there 3 months. But thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to be here. I worked for the South Washington County School District for 23 years prior to, offered the position in Anoka. And I was there. We had a couple of accidents there, two fatalities. And I support the idea that the inspectors come and continue to inspect buses as they have. They hold the shop accountable every year. And we compare the points off per bus industry-wide. I believe that's an important piece to what they do. Also, after a crash, they come and inspect not only your bus files, but they inspect your driver files. And I would encourage that there be more support for more proactive looking at the files. They do it on a sample basis, and they do that a little more because that after a crash, that's not when you want to find out how your system is working. You want to know that it's working well before that happens. So those are my comments. Thank you.
Yeah, Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Paulson. I think Captain Urquhart had made a comment in his testimony about the in many of the safety issues, drivers tend to perhaps could be more of a more significant part of the problem than the vehicle itself. Would you agree with that in your experience that the factors related to driver performance are a larger factor in accidents or mishaps than equipment or failures? Is that, in your experience, fair?
Mr. Chair, Senator, yes. My experience is that there's very few vehicle issues or mechanical problems, but I think it has to do with there's a solid inspection program in place that keeps the vehicles well-maintained. So I think that taking attention away from that may cause more problems.
And Mr. Chairman, Mr. Paulson, thank you. What kind of things does your district do to address the driver issue? To if we recognize, and I think it's probably true for the public at large, that human error is a significant factor in it, but what kinds of things do you, as a transportation director, try to do to minimize or reduce that driver component in this safety area? Are there specific things that you're trying to do or have changed in response to different? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Mr. Chair, Senator, my experience in the previous district as well as in the Nalka-Hennepin is that we do review each accident. We have a review committee, and we review whether or not the accident is preventable or non-preventable. We also then take statistics and determine whether or not there's a trend going on. That's what I've done in the past. And to see that if there's some trends going on, then fold that information back into driver training so that can be mitigated as much as possible.
And Mr. Chairman and Mr. Paulson, one last question. Does any of this, in terms of your hiring decisions or your just initial training, What kinds of, is that a standard part of what you look at when you're hiring? Or maybe you're not hiring directly because you're dealing with a contract service, but do you get involved in that to ask how do you do screening or how do you determine who are valid candidates and what kind of pool are you trying to recruit from and so forth? Are those questions that you get involved in?
And maybe I can, Mr. Chair, Senator, I can respond to what I have done, and then maybe Mr. Holden can respond to what the contractors currently do. We would interview people, look at their driving records and their history, and make sure that they have a good driving record. And we'd have a standard that would be higher than what the state had. As far as if there was someone that had an alcohol issue in their past, we wouldn't hire anybody, even though the state might allow them after a few years. And I think the state's got some good standards in place. But also do various things about their driving record. You won't even talk to someone before you look at their driving record. And then there's background checks and criminal background checks and drug tests and all kinds of things that go on besides trying to make sure that they can properly operate a vehicle and work well with kids. So there's a number of things that I've done in the past.
Yeah. In addition, Mr. Chair and Senators, committee members, I'd just like to add that we are involved in that process. We have in our specifications and our contract the right to review all of the driving records. We do that on a twice a year basis, twice a school year basis, and we also have input into hiring decisions and termination decisions based on employee or driver performance. In addition, there's much in-service training that's required in our contract where there's at least a driver meeting once a month during the school year on a variety of topics, and coming up will be extreme driving conditions. And as Mr. Paulson indicated, we do review every crash and look at preventability, non-preventability, discuss that, and those findings are shared with every bus driver.
Senator Bonner.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Holden or Mr. Paulson, I don't know which of you might answer this question, but do you think the standards with regards to drivers are consistent between school districts that use their own fleets or school districts that hire out with private contractors in terms of, say, alcohol infractions, and what kind of consistency is there across the board?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I think there is consistency. And based on what the statutory requirements are and the criminal background checks, the drug and alcohol testing, initial testing, random testing, all of that is in statute, and I think was a good improvement for the industry and for the system. So whether a district is district-owned, fleet, or contracted, everyone is meeting those requirements. And there are training requirements for bus drivers, so it's pretty well spelled out.
Any other questions? Okay. Mr. Holden, Mr. Paulson, thank you very much for coming before our committee.
Thank you.
Our next testifiers will be Brad Lundell and David Peterson from the Minnesota Association for Pupil Transportation.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brad Lundell, and I'm here today working with the Minnesota Association for Pupil Transportation. I've been around this building a long time, and I can't help but go back to the historical long view a lot of times as to how we got to where we got, where we are right now. And I think we need to look back at the whole pupil transportation, the concentration on pupil transportation really started in 1993 in wake of a number of fatalities and also with some incidents of student misbehavior on buses that the legislature convened a task force on pupil safety and pupil transportation safety. And in 1994, that resulted in many of the laws that we have right now, the movement of the vehicle standards from rule to law. So whenever we come with our annual or our biannual bill that talks about alternators and those types of things, that's where that comes from. We moved those vehicle standards from rule to law back in 1994. We also enacted some driver standards, some mandatory student training. The Office of School Bus Safety was created. The School Bus Safety Advisory Committee was created. Also, there were $3 of pupil safety, $3 per pupil of money to each school district for safety issues. Now, $3, obviously, you can't buy much, but there was at least a nod toward pupil safety in the education funding formula. Many of these things have gone by the wayside, and I think that it's incumbent on all of us, both on the industry side and on the legislative side, the administrative side, to revisit this and to look at some of the things we can do in a broad sense, not simply just on inspections, but how we're going to do things in a broad sense to ensure pupil safety. One of the things, and I see that we have Senator Bonhoff and Senator Wieger and Senator Hahn, who all serve on the Education Funding Division, and I think one of the things that, and I know that Senator Pogemiller, who was the chair of the Education Funding Division, would disagree with me violently on this issue, but I think one of the problems that we've had is the roll-in of transportation that was adopted in 1995. And that roll-in of transportation into the general ed formula, I think, has been – it was done under the guise of flexibility, but I would argue persuasively that we have less flexibility, especially in dealing with transportation issues as a result of that decision than we have had before. And I think that when you talk about non-regular transportation – the ability of districts to, especially growing districts with new subdivisions, to be able to, on an aid levy basis, be able to have those costs taken care of. Some of the 1 mile, 2 mile issues that are incumbent in a lot of districts were at least lessened somewhat when there was a transportation formula that dealt simply with transportation as to have those transportation needs pitted against general education needs. And I think that I work with a lot of school districts and work with other clients. School buses and school buses don't testify at school board meetings. And so when we see that a lot of the equipment, a lot of those types of issues really go by the wayside. And you've put school boards in a very difficult situation because obviously many of the support services don't rise to the level of concern until there is an issue that is often too late when we talk about equipment failures and the like. I think one of the things also that was done in the rolling in of the transportation was the elimination of the bus purchase levy. And I know that that kind of pits districts with contracts versus districts who own their own fleets. And I think that, we have to do something. If to bring back the bus purchase levy, you would have to look at something that would do similar things for districts that contract. But we've seen the fleet get older and older and older. And there's Dave Peterson from MAPT provided me with this data from 2002 work done by the Department of Education. 41 districts responded to whether or not they'd changed their bus purchase pattern since the rolling in or the elimination of the bus purchase levy. 7 said they hadn't changed, and 34 said they had. And each of those 34 are more, they weren't buying more buses, put it that way. They weren't buying newer buses. The mechanics out there in the field do tremendous work. I think of a transportation coordinator who's kind of torn. He puts buses on the road that are more than 20 years old, and he's very proud of the fact that he can keep those buses passing inspections and keep them going. But at the same time, he knows that he needs new buses, and so he's proud of his ability of he and his mechanics. But he also realizes that there's safety features on the newer buses that simply aren't on those older buses. Getting a newer fleet or giving districts the opportunity to get newer fleets or the newer buses on the road clearly is something that we have to look at. And again, bringing back some kind of bus acquisition policy, and again, the ability, there is an unevenness here between contracted districts and non-contracted districts, but clearly for the non-contracted districts, the ability to get newer buses on the road is something that's extremely important. Compounding this, and I think that Mr. Holden hit on this, and in my respects here, go to Ken Urquhart, who I think is one of the hardest working men in state government. He's got his cell phone on. If you ever want to talk to him, you got to call him on his cell phone because he's never in his office, and he returns his calls, you know, very fast. So I would, but we just don't have enough hands and feet in all of state government these days. I think one of the things that we've seen. And with all due respect to the difficulties that the legislature has faced, that the administration has faced in balancing the state budget, I think the state bureaucracy and the state administrations have really lost a lot of their kinds of hands and feet power. And I think these are hands and feet jobs. These are jobs where people have to come out and look at things, do paperwork, look through paperwork. This isn't something that you can do over the phone. This isn't something that you can do virtually. This is something that takes people to do. And we've seen it in the Department of Public Safety, which I've worked closely with, you know, with this client. We've seen it in the Department of Education, where I've worked with other clients. Bureaucracies have just taken a hit. And I don't have a bumper sticker that says honk if you love bureaucrats. If I did, I don't think many people would honk at me. But I think what we've seen here is that and again, across state government, just a real problem in getting the kinds of services that we need. Now, I think we have to define what those services are and then put the people power in place to make sure that can be done. But I think that we've gotten to the point where we've cut into bone and we're continuing to cut into bone, and we've got to figure out if we want certain things, if we expect certain things. I think we have to step up and say this is the kind of manpower, woman power that we need to get those things done. You know, with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is David Peterson, and I'm here representing the Minnesota Association for MAPT, or Minnesota Association for Public Transportation, that is MAPT. And I'm here mainly to answer questions, but I do want to raise two issues. My background, I've been in Transportation Administration for 28 years, and since 1989, I've been the legislative chair of the Minnesota Association of People Transportation. I'm also the Northern States and Central States Association representation to the National Association of State Directors of People Transportation Service. The two issues that I want to talk about are the Type A school bus driver qualifications and also van driver qualifications. With the Type A school bus, a issue came up last session that I think needs to be addressed again this upcoming session. School buses are subject to two bus construction standards. One is the Federal Motor Vehicle Safety Standards by the federal government that regulates trucking and also has some special construction standards for school buses. Example of that is for school buses is one of the regulations is the bus body has to be in a have a steel cage in it, so if the bus rolls over, the steel cage will hold 1.5 times its weight, so the bus does not crush when it rolls over. The other national standards is from the National Congress of Transportation's Pupil Transportation, and that's the industry representatives getting together, making the model recommendations, and then the states adopt those recommendations if they so choose. The Congress gets together every 5 years. Last time was 2005, and afterwards they published this document. Example of one of the laws that are adopted out of the National Congress of Pupil Transportation is the School Bus Color Yellow. All 50 states have now adopted the recommendation that school buses be painted yellow. Minnesota adopts the equipment standards put out by the National Congress with several exceptions. An example, an exception is Minnesota buses have plywood floors because of the concern of rusting and salt corrosion. Last session, the legislature updated to the 2005 standards, but one item got omitted that has to do with a Type A school bus. A Type A school bus is a small school bus. It would look like a van on the front of the bus with a school bus, small school bus body on the back of the bus. The national standards were raising the definition of a Type A vehicle from 10,000 pounds to 14,500 pounds. I've talked to school bus vehicle distributors, representatives to the National Congress, and to the writer of the chairman of the writing committee for the bus chassis committee. And it looks like the primary reason this weight change has occurred is because is needed to accommodate diesel engines in these type of vehicles. It seemed like last session there was some concern that somehow we were trying to avoid drivers obtaining the CDL for in some situations. That's not the case. This is simply a case that the weight needs to change in order to accommodate diesel engines. So we're hopeful that this upcoming session that the legislature will adopt the weight change so we can be consistent with the national standards and with other states. The second issue I wanted to talk about is van driver qualifications. Currently, MFT is conducting two surveys on this issue. We're doing this because, for one, we like to look at different areas of student transportation and try and make improvements in school bus safety, but also we are aware that there's some concern of what the van driver qualification should be. Department of Education has some statistics on their website. Department of Education for school year 2005-2006 reports that there was 2,924 Type 3 vehicles. Type 3 vehicles are, as Captain Rickard mentioned, cars and vans that are inspected by the Highway Patrol. And Department of Education also reports that there are 233 school districts that own these type of vehicles, but they don't have a report on the number of school districts that contract for these type of vehicles. But with 233 school districts alone just owning these vehicles, you can see that the vehicles are used in local school districts throughout the state of Minnesota and they're quite widespread. One reason for the use of a van is because of the cost of a school bus. A school bus regular size costs about $75,000 to $80,000. Another consideration is a school bus driver would need to have a commercial driver's license, CDL. If for some reason we were to take all the drivers out of vans and make them drive school buses, they probably would not all be able to obtain a CDL and would really exasperate ongoing driver shortage that's occurring primarily in the Twin Cities area. I did mention two surveys. The first survey we're conducting is what other states are doing. We're conducting a survey with the National Association a State Directors of Pupil Transportation Service, but we don't expect to have results of this survey until early November. The second survey is we're surveying Minnesota school districts for what they're doing in vans beyond what's required by law. And we got our preliminary results, and we're going to bring these to our MAPT Fall Conference this Friday. A couple of things that stick out to me. One is that the majority of districts that responded disqualify their van drivers if they have an accident while driving a van. Another item sticks out is background checks. School district employees are required to have a background check, but a contracted van driver does not have a background check unless that driver also happens to have a CDL to drive a school bus. So it looks like there's an area that needs improvement there. Third area that sticks out is the level of training. Many districts report providing training. One piece I particularly liked was submitted by Bemidji Schools, where they have a one-page handout listing the rules of the road, how to operate the vehicle, don't use the cell phone while driving, and so forth, and then the driver signs off annually. But it looks like training is another area where we could look at for making some recommendations. So at this point, I'm not able to bring recommendations because we haven't discussed this at our association meeting, but I'm hopeful we can bring back some recommendations before the session starts. And as I say, I'm mainly here to answer questions, and I could answer questions at this point, or also I could turn over to our third presenter at this time.
Yeah, we also have Mr. Lenz from the Minnesota School Bus Operators Association. Yes. Welcome, and if you could just identify yourself for the record.
My name is Galen Lenz. I'm with the Minnesota School Bus Operators Association. I'm also a private contractor. To testify for the MSBOA, as of right now, our association has not taken a stance on self-inspection. We do have a membership that is split on that because we do have some members that also own motor coaches and trucking companies, and they have no problem with self-inspection because they do it for their other vehicles. We have a lot of our members, though, also own and operate just school buses, and they do not want to go to self-inspection. So as an association, we have not taken a stance. Personally, as I see it over the years, I've been in this now 25 years, I do know that most contractors and school districts that own their own do a good job. They have great inspection rates and records. There might be a few that let some things slide, and I know that does happen. It puts a black eye on the whole industry, whether it's publicly owned or privately owned. We used to be at 2 inspections a year many years ago. And personnel I know has dwindled, and we've gone down to 1 inspection. We can look at it at different ways, but if we want to look at it one way, at least when each school bus is inspected in the state of Minnesota each year, we do know that every bus is at least up to par once during the year, to where if the inspector comes in and says, you need new tires, you need new brakes, they have to have that done, because if they reject that bus and flunk it, they cannot move that bus till the inspector comes back. But like I said, I believe most districts and most operators do a phenomenal job, and we have great inspectors out there. I think the problem is that we need more personnel, state inspectors, to be able to do these inspections. I'm here to answer questions on anything you might ask. Also, I'd like to talk quickly about the Type 3 vehicle driver qualifications that was touched on, even though you just need a regular license for that. I do know that I cannot speak for the school districts. I do know that in talking to some of the contractors, some of them also hold their Type 3 vehicle drivers to the same par as their school bus drivers. So some of them do require a background check. Some of them will do a drug and alcohol program, but it has to be separate from their school bus drivers because you cannot have them in your CDL pool. And they will also do their vehicle or their driver's license checks. So I do believe there are a lot of them that go up and beyond what the state laws are, but we probably do have to revisit a lot of these issues.
Any questions?
Sure.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Mr. Lindell and Mr. Peterson. Mr. Lenz, thank you for coming and testifying. And I guess I'd like to ask the question I asked the representative from Anoka Hennepin. I think as we look at this issue, in my mind, there has to be a context to put this in. And I served on a school board that operated a fleet of buses. They owned their own fleet. I'm not sure I would agree, Mr. Lindell, exactly that, with the assertion that districts don't plan for replacement on a regular basis, or that the rolling into the formula may or may not be an issue for this committee. But there's questions on both sides of that. But the real thing I'm wrestling with a little bit is that anecdotally I hear things like, well, the standards for buses has gone up, that the way we build buses today is much, much better than what we did, 20 years ago, that the vehicles themselves are much safer and so forth. And do we have data that would show over some period of time, 10, 12 years, whatever the time frame is, that would show the rate of accidents or safety issues and the magnitude of them? And I guess secondly, related to that, whether those issues are equipment related or whether they're driver related. I think that to me, we shouldn't just lump those two things together and say that if you have a bus safety issue, I think it's a big part of this to understand whether we're talking about issues that have to do with qualifications of drivers and how they do their job, or we're talking about things that have to do with buses and their maintenance schedules and whether they're being done properly, and those kinds of questions, which I think are very different. So maybe you as organizations have some data that would be helpful for us in putting into context whether we're seeing things get better or worse. And I think depending on what we see would, in my mind, help us to determine what kind of response we ought to do or what kind of action we ought to take at this point. So any comment on that or any information you could provide us to help on that?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Hand, we'll certainly look that up. I think that there are some things at the national level that would show, nationally where some of these things are going. I think the one thing to remember, too, is that there's a third prong, and that's student training, because a greater number of accidents don't happen inside the bus. They happen when the student is either getting on the bus, getting off the bus. In fact, the fatality in Roseville a year ago or 2 years ago was dealing more with what the young students, but where the student got kind of out of the side of the driver's view and the driver was distracted. So there was a kind of, I wouldn't say shared responsibility because the child was so young, but I guess the thing is the student training is also extremely important in this. But I think that it is a three-pronged approach, and we have to look at each of those and make sure that we are doing the highest level in each of those areas. There's just no question of that.
Senator Hahn and members of the committee, our association does not maintain statistics on accidents. I can only speak anecdotally what's occurred over the years. The Department of Public Safety does have some statistics, and it seems that possibly they may be able to pull some numbers together.
Any other questions? Senator Weir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and any of the panelists. Overall, is the behavior of students improved on school buses? And is there anything further we need to do in addressing that? I believe Mr. Lundell mentioned the 1994 task force that developed a lot of the recommendations on many facets, but on student behavior and any further regulation needed on that?
Senator, members of the committee, in 1994, the legislature changed the primary agency for school bus safety from Department of Education to Department of Safety. At that time, Department of Public Safety had Colonel Glenn Ramsey assigned to bus safety as a full-time school bus administrator. The next person that came in was part-time, and then now the third person, Captain Rickard, has many other duties also. And so the primary thing I would like to see is a full-time person from a state agency assigned to scuba safety. I don't mean this to disparage Captain Rickard in any way whatsoever. He does an outstanding job with the limited time and resources he has. A secondary area we could probably look at would be annual in-service training for scuba drivers. Currently, drivers have a number of qualification had to meet to get the CDL and get school bus endorsement and background checks and physical check and so forth. But in the area of training, the drivers had to be certified as competent according to the school bus safety material and the Department of Public Safety's model training manual. But we don't by law require any annual in-service hours specifically for school bus drivers. So potential area for improvement.
Mr. Chair, Senator Wieger, we're having our fall conference this week, and we'll talk to folks as to whether or not student behavior has changed. I think one thing that was included in the language enacted in 1994 is that bus riding went from a right to a privilege. And I think that districts have more of an ability to remove unruly students than they had in the past. And so I think that, but again, I don't have any idea on incidents, and I think that, you know, I don't know if that's kept at the Department of Bob Fisher keeps that at all. So I it would be interesting to see whether or not that is. It was once upon a time it was recorded. I don't know if it still is.
Well, I concur with them as far as it is when the state changed it to be a privilege, not a right, that maybe that the behavior has changed. Driving school bus myself a lot also, I think that the kids today allow the behaviors better than what it was years ago, but also within the school district when you're talking about unruly students, and if they're also unruly in the classroom, it's very easy to put it into their IEP that there is a behavior problem here, and then they're a lot of times put on a different vehicle and not on with the regular route, sometimes taken to other schools for other programs because they don't have the program in-house in the home district to take care of them. So that might also account for better behavior on the bus today than what it was because they will put it in their IEP that they have a behavior problem.
One of the school district that I was on the board for, they had gone to stop arm cameras on a number of their buses. And I guess we all know the story of the photocop and stop arm. So they pulled those, but they were able to get a number of violations or catch a number of offenders. But it continues that people blow through those stop arms. And what amazes me is that people even pass on the right-hand side. There's a national standards. You know, I read a lot of that big book, David, but I didn't read all of it. Is there anything in there about addressing possibly – I know some districts have gone to two stop arms, one in the rear, maybe one on the right-hand side. Is there any discussion of those kinds of things to try to stop these stop arm violations?
Senator Olsen, I don't believe there's anything in the model recommendations addressing the use of the video cameras.
I'm talking primarily about mounting another stop arm. Like North Branch Schools has mounted one on the back. It's still on the driver's side. But so then there's two actual stop arms there, and they say that that's helped tremendously with some of the stop arm violations because it, you know, people, I don't know how they can't see a bus stopped, but that's usually what they claim. And but so is there maybe a movement to move towards two stop arms or maybe one on the right-hand side also? Anyone?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I know that wasn't this past it wasn't the past update that we had in the legislature, and I think this was in the 2004 session, I believe, or 2006, that there was the update there did allow school districts to use the second stop arm mounted on the rear left, I believe. So, I mean, that is now allowed under state rule, or it's clarified that it's allowed under state rule. Just anecdotally again, I see more and more of those buses. I'm still surprised how people miss the eight-way lights, much less a stop arm being out. I think that that's one of the things where law enforcement really has to, you know, I'm not going to, you know, law enforcement, I mean, you can't catch a person if there's not a cop around, I guess. But the thing is that there needs to be stiffer penalties for running a stop arm. I think that would be the strongest thing to do in this regard.
Yes.
I think after he got talking about law enforcement, some things that we also might want to bring up is you get to different parts of the state and you talk to local city police or you talk to the city prosecutor who might prosecute a school bus stop arm violation, some take it more seriously than others. Some don't want to prosecute it. Some do. We had an instance many years ago down in southern Minnesota to where a person passed us, one of our stop school buses on the right-hand side, as a student was getting ready to get out, and the driver closed the door in time and would not allow that student out. And this person was written a ticket, and it's when you're written a ticket, it's a mandatory appearance in front of a judge. And he appeared in front of the judge, and the judge asked him what he was thinking at the time, and he said, well, I thought those lights up there, I thought he had his blinker on. The judge dismissed the case, let him go. So you got inconsistencies between some police chiefs who might not write the ticket, when he does write it, a prosecutor who will not prosecute it, and then trying to hold the judges also saying, take it seriously, fine them.
Thank you. Anything else? Gentlemen, thank you for presenting. Next, we have Sarah Greenfield from Community Relations with the SEIU Local 284.
Galen.
He was up there with the. Yep.
Mr. Chair, Senators, thank you. I'm Sarah Greenfield. I'm the community organizer and also the student transportation industry specialist at SEIU Local 284. We're a union of public school support staff, 8,000 public school support staff around the state of Minnesota, and the largest union of student transportation workers in Minnesota. I have some comments both about inspections and about licensing, and thank you for allowing me to speak to you today. And I also have some articles just reflecting some of the recent issues in student transportation that I can pass around if you'd like. As far as inspections, we agree with several of the folks who have testified already today that our members do confirm that there are not enough unannounced inspections. They, across many districts, have not seen unannounced inspections regularly, if at all, and would like to see more. However, they also do confirm that the regular announced inspections that they do see every year do result in a flurry of activity of readying the buses, which may not always be it's not the only way, certainly not the ideal way that we want to see buses taken care of, but it's important that they are having that effect and that it's an important effect, that flurry of making sure the buses are ready, of having them inspected, of having an outside eye to make sure that that any problems are followed up on, that's very important, and they want to see that continued. And so we also would be in favor of, rather than choosing an either or, that because we do need more unannounced inspections and more ability to also look at drivers, that's not a reason to reduce what we're already doing that is working, but a reason to find the resources, if we can, to do more of both. And there are included in these articles mention of the Hamlake Cot Case crash, and also a situation in California with Laidlaw, now part of First Student, but at that time Laidlaw, where there were workers who were pressured into falsifying, in that case, admissions data. But I think it speaks to something that even our members have noticed, that there can be significant industry pressures to make sure that buses pass, especially when there's so much, and this could happen in a district as well as with a contractor, but when there is so much financial pressure to keep these fleets up and running, that there could be significant pressures if the only eyes looking at these buses were in-house to make sure that those buses pass when they might not really be what we want to see on the road. So we would continue to be in favor of having outside as well as inside inspections. As far as licensing, we're in favor of always raising standards, especially at this time, and not lowering them. As far as the question around the Type 3 vehicles, we would also agree that anybody, frankly, with any type of vehicle, anybody who's transporting students, there may be particular needs for certification around the type of vehicle, but the vast majority of the reason that there should be a school bus endorsement and a commercial driver's license is because of the students that these folks are transporting, and that's the same regardless of the vehicle that they're in. And so to the question of the type A's and the 10,000 to 14,000 classification, I think it was brought up that we do indeed often follow the recommendations, the national recommendations, but not all of them, and that we're not suggesting that people not be allowed to use those vehicles or that if there's been a change in the weight of those vehicles due to a change in the engine that they no longer be allowed, simply that we take this opportunity to make sure that as many people as possible who are transporting our children have the background checks and the certifications necessary to make sure that they're really qualified to do that. And I think both of those issues really speak to a bigger issue around, you know, as many standards as we put forward about drivers, certifications, inspections are only as good as our ability to draw and retain a qualified pool of drivers and therefore really be able to afford to enforce those standards. And we'll continue to advocate as far as the question of what we think would improve safety, that as Inspector Ricard said, that certainly there be more attention paid to drivers as well as buses. Our members are in favor of that. And then in addition, we make sure that the state is also encouraging districts to request the kind of information from their contractors and collect information in a way that's useful. As you've asked, you know, how do we collect data across the board and over time about accidents, about the turnover rate and length of experience of those folks who are transporting our drivers or transporting our students, that those are really key issues. And in a market like this, it's very important that we be giving incentives to everybody just by watching to make sure that they're not only applying the basic minimum standards around who they're hiring and the servability of the buses, but that they're also looking at what kind of quality of employee they're retaining over time. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate your comments, Ms. Greenfield, and thank you for coming. And I've been trying to get at a little bit of sense of context for this as you've been here and hearing, and someone here in the committee, one of our staff folks, had gotten some report, and I was looking at that, and according to that, the data would suggest that over the past 10, 12 years that we've seen about a 30% decline in accidents in total, mm-hmm. and that the overwhelming majority, something like 90% of them, are related to driver issues rather than vehicle issues, and that almost half of the accidents are really the fault of other vehicles, not the bus themselves. And if that is the context, and I don't know if that's just 1 year, mm-hmm. I guess. There was some trend data in this thing that I was looking at. But if that is the experience that we're seeing, a steady decline in injuries and in accidents in over whatever the period of time is, if that's going on, and the larger percentage of problems has to do with people, drivers, mm-hmm. and their ability or their focus or their attention, and there's a significant part that is sort of out of our control, if you will, if it's just other vehicles who are doing whatever they're doing. What, if that is the true state of this, what would be the response that you think that we ought to have to that set of conditions? Should we have more inspectors doing more equipment inspections? Should we focus more on what the standard of driver training is and how the hires are made? Or what would be the focus, in your opinion?
Well, I think that for the purpose of an looking at the education policy and the student transportation policy in particular, that those are the areas that we can best control and that we want to make sure in any accident that you're able to look back and say that you've done as much as possible, that we've all done as much as possible around those factors that we can control. And so, you know, we absolutely agree and our members are very proud that there's a relatively low incident of accidents in student transportation, period, and within that a relatively low incident of certainly of student fatalities and injuries. In Minneapolis, which is the only district to my knowledge that has attempted to request this information from their contractors and compile it for themselves, they have seen that their in-house drivers have a approximately three times the length of experience of, on average, their contracted drivers, and three times more accidents among their contracted drivers, and three times more accidents with injuries. So they have yet to put those requirements in their contract to request that information on a regular basis. So that's from a handful of quarters that they sampled. But I think that indicates that there is still room to, within the range of accidents that we do have, to look at what are the factors. And I work with both contracted and in-house drivers, union and non-union drivers, and so I certainly don't mean to say that there is a personal problem with other folks, but I think we need to look at what are the best practices in terms of employment and retention that can reduce the rate of injury and accident that we do have as much as possible.
And so, Mr. Chairman and Ms. Greenfield, so part of what you're recommending is that maybe we look at the differences between contracted bus services and, I guess, in-house bus services provided by districts to see if there are significant differences in safety with respect to accidents or other kinds of, and to say, well, to find out if there is a difference, and if there is, to, I guess, make some determination on what to do next. But would that be part of your recommendation, that we try to understand that?
I think so, and actually, that Mr. Chairman, Senators, that in the sense that we should be collecting more data across the board, and that there may be differences between contractors and in-house drivers. There may be differences within different in-house fleets, different contractors, but that we can't start to establish who has a better record and where the best practices are and what exactly is happening without starting to track what I think is some very important information about the what we know anecdotally, and as I said, from Minneapolis, that there is some correlation between length of experience, turnover, and accident rate, and an injury within those accidents. And that information would be pretty easily available should we choose to start tracking it and collecting it. And then we can decide how we need to address those issues, if in fact there is an issue there. If I may, one comment I've heard several times from school boards as we've raised these issues at the district level is the question of, if we were to find that one of our contracts was poor performing, or that our in-house fleet was better performing, or vice versa, we don't really have any options. So what are we even going to do with the information? We're already strapped for recruiting as many drivers as we need, in many cases, and we get the same bids year after year in terms of who our options are, of whom to contract our services out to, and we have no land accessible to us if we wanted to offer that bid to another contractor or bring more in-house. And I think the recent U.S. court decision around the antitrust merger speaks to, the antitrust case around the First Student Lead Law merger speaks to that. This is just a large national problem, and looking at choices for school districts, especially as it relates to accessibility of land, is another area where we could be providing more accountability in the system. And I do have at least 5 copies of that decision if folks don't have it already.
Okay. Senator Bonner.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olsen and Senator Han, in your work with regard to this committee, I'm hopeful that besides getting recommendations from Captain Eckhart as to inspection changes, I would hope that we would end this work with some concrete recommendations for how we can do more with regard to the drivers and have more consistency. And I think when Captain Eckhart talked about what it is to have, you know, the police officer standing there before parents, I think that it would be useful to have them able to look eye to eye with a driver, that there's something about having a driver have to look in the eyes of the police officer, and that brings forth a sense of responsibility that might not be there otherwise, and that they may have a sense of they may be able to see something that a regular person might not notice when just talking to these bus drivers. So I would encourage us to look at some way to involve our officers with that process. And then the other thing is, this is just a hypothesis, and I don't yet have a clear path, but it's why I requested to sit on this committee, is that I have some sense that if we looked at this from more of a regional perspective, there could be some cost savings. And I don't have a clear plan about that, but I raise it just as a something else to continue discussing and looking at so that every single school district doesn't have the financial responsibility of some of these issues.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. Ms. Greenfield, thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else present today who would like to testify? Sure. Come up and identify yourself for the record.
My name is Fred Lenz, and I'm from St. James, Minnesota. I'm a private contractor for the last 32 years. Been 36 years in the industry, and I thank you for allowing me to speak to you today. A couple of things that I would like to talk about is the self-inspection that had been brought up previously, but now as I listen to the testimony, it looks like we have more people wanting to stay with the program that we have. A little background on that was that as they talked about, there used to be twice-a-year inspections, and in 1981, when Governor Quay had to cut the budget, we went back to just once a year. And during the years that all the programs were cut, everything came back to the legislature and was reinstated. School bus safety, as far as the inspections, took a backseat to it and never got funded or taken care of during the ensuing years. Consequently, as they did not get their budgets fulfilled, they had to cut back on inspectors and such. The inspection that Minnesota has is probably one of the best in the nation. And I'm very proud of the fact that when they come to our house to inspect our buses in all of our districts that we serve, and we do serve in three districts and four, actually, with my son Galen over here, we've had good inspections. We've had good relations. I like the thorough job that they do. And I think that we need to stay with that. I believe that the state needs to take its responsibility as far as funding that program so they can adequately have enough inspectors to do the job. 12 inspectors for 13,000 buses is a tremendous responsibility for these men to take care of, and they do need them. As far as the driver qualifications, the van drivers that you've been talking about, as private contractors, we require our drivers to have the criminal background checks. We have them do drug and alcohol testing when they apply. And we hold them to the same standards as far as coming to our meetings and knowing what we stand for and what we do. Because they drive a van and not a school bus doesn't mean that they're not accountable for what their responsibility is to the student that they are transporting or students that they have. So my feeling is that if there's a need to make some changes, just add to them that they have to have the criminal background checks, that they have to do the drug and alcohol testing, and put them right in with the rest of the CDL requirements that they have. Just don't have to have the school bus endorsement because they're driving a van. It'd be a simple procedure to do something like that. As far as another issue that was brought up with a lady senator mentioned about seat belts in the school buses, and I would like to just momentarily talk about that. The issue of seat belts in school buses has been brought up, and I do every spring I do a seminar for parents and students that are children are coming from Head Start programs into the school bus transportation to the district. And in 30 years of plus years of doing this, I explain to them why there are not seat belts in large school buses. In mini buses and that, I don't have any problem with that. There need to be seat belts because they're on a one-ton chassis and they're subject to straight on like a pickup or something like that. The school bus, when you take and we do the safety development with these children, and you go to evacuate a school bus on level ground, a 77-passenger bus with 40, 50 students on it, and you take them out of that bus, take them out a back door, takes about a minute and 45 seconds if it's done in good order. I happen to have a video of a minibus that had an electrical fire in the dash, and in a minute and 45 seconds, that entire video shows that that bus is full of black smoke. Now, my concern is this. If you have an accident with 40 students on, and you have to have seat belts in all these big buses, and you tip that bus over on its side, you're going to have children that are panicking and hanging there and trying to get out to try to evacuate that, and you're going to ask your bus driver to cut all these children loose and get them out. Time is of the essence. And if you think about it this way. You can take a deep breath and inhale and hold your breath for about a minute. But when you exhale, the longest I've ever seen anybody be able to hold their breath and not taking something back in is 13 seconds. Now think about it, what you're asking your driver to do to get these children out of there if you have everybody hung in there and seat belted in. The statistics are that I have from years past is school buses travel over 4 billion miles a year annually. The statistics that I have also tell me that inside the bus we have an average of 9 deaths per year inside the school bus. However, one thing that the public never hears is there are between 600 and 800 deaths per year students traveling to and from school in their own vehicles. I don't know that you will ever get anything to be perfect inside these buses because human error and human error is always there. But I do not want to see, myself, I do not want to see seat belts inside of the large buses. They are designed to take an impact. You will find that they perform and do what they're intended to do. We always strive for more safety as we go along, and it works out pretty good. I think that they've done everything that they're supposed to do. The other thing that I would address is the employees that I have. My employees are also my best friends, and they're an extension of everything that I do. And I have advertised for school bus drivers once in 32 years. We recruit our drivers. We retain our drivers. I have 8 of my original drivers from 32 years ago that are still driving for me today. And most of our drivers stay a long time. They are dedicated individuals. They are people that most of you never see. Most families don't even know who their driver is and get acquainted with them. And I wrote an article to our local paper to get to know your driver. These people see your children from the time they start school till they graduate, and probably more often spend more time with them than any individual teacher or any individual that they contact during their 12 or 13 years that they're in school. And I'm very proud of the fact that our operators, both public and private, retain the best drivers that they can. We have, I think, a good working relationship. We do a seminar every year for our drivers. We discuss every day with our drivers what is going on. Different situations come up, and we keep an open-door policy for families. If there's discipline that has to be done, we do the discipline in cooperation with the school district, and we talk to the families. I never have had a closed door to any individual or any administrator to take and bring their problems or concerns to us. And so these are the things that we have done in our area. We operate in St. James, Truman, and Medelia, and my son is at Lake Crystal. And this is something that we live and do every single day. I don't recall that I've ever gone home and not thought about what has to be done the next day. And we plan for it year after year after year. And we've had good cooperation between the districts, the administration, the school boards. It's been a wonderful thing. I'm open to any questions that you would have on what I have spoken to.
Okay. Mr. Lenz, I would say that you speak with somebody with over 30 years of experience. That comes across very clearly. Are there any other questions?
No.
Okay.
Mr. Lenz, say his business or whereabouts?
Pardon?
Where is your company? Or?
We are at St. James, Minnesota. We're about 40 miles southwest of Mankato. And then we also operate, my sons and I operate together. We have school buses in Truman, Minnesota, Medelia, Minnesota, and my son Galen, who had testified earlier, is at Lake Crystal, Minnesota. Between us, we probably have about 75 vehicles and probably 150 employees. And we're very proud of them. We've had some that have 50 years of service, several in the 40-year service range. Myself, I'm 36 years myself.
Well, thank you for testifying.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to do so. I certainly appreciate it.
Is there any other parties that would like to come before us? I must say that the Office of the Legislative Auditors, they're doing an audit on student transportation, and some of those folks are here today witnessing today's testimony. So with that, I guess we'll have some future discussion on our next topics. I know Senator Hand.
Just before we adjourn, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to know if this report that the staff showed me, could we get copies of that for the rest of the members? I don't know if that was a 2005, and if there's any more recent reports that we could look at.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hanna, I think the 2006 is probably done, but I'll get that for the
But if we
committee.
Could just get copies of it, I think the members would be would like to see that, and I think it would help put in context the whole issue that we're wrestling with. So thank you.
Well, I think we've heard some pretty important testimony on one thing I do need to say is that a number of us are also on transportation, and we were down at the bridge site the Monday following the collapse of the bridge, and we saw that school bus on there. And I think it's a testimony to the school bus safety built into these vehicles, because that we saw, you know, that thing fell 60 feet. And, you know, there were some relatively, I believe there was two pretty serious injuries, but most of the kids, for the most part, escaped that with minor injuries, if any injuries at all. So I think that's kind of a testimony to where we're at with school bus safety on the buses. And we've heard good testimony. I believe that we need to continue that and expand it if we could. But the other thing is, I'm hearing so much that it's a lot of human issues, and maybe we need to look at expanding, you know, looking at the drivers more rigorously and randomly. I was thinking about, as this discussion happened, is if we're under the preview of education or transportation, we're kind of in muddy waters here, I think. So,
public safety.
Yeah, so I want to find out, you know, where we, what our role is on the Education Policy Committee to actually bring forth some changes, and if this is the appropriate place. I hope it is, because I think we're all pretty interested in protecting our students. With that, we do have some other subjects that we want to approach in our next meeting. And Senator Hand, if you want to discuss your concern about looking at alternative funding for transportation just briefly.
Well, Mr. Chairman, thank you. And members, just briefly, I've, from my experience when I was on the board, and it kind of goes to some of the comment that Mr. Lundell was talking to, the need for school districts to find ways to be flexible in how they're addressing transportation needs. And I have had a bill in the past that maybe needs to be reworked or rethought, but this committee might be one way to try to do some work on that to see what is viable. But what we were trying to accomplish was issues that the 1 mile or 2 mile transportation limits that are in place, and sometimes that puts constraints that are not very workable for local districts, and try to find a way to give local districts some flexibility in how they decide to do that. And in the case of my experience with Eden Prairie, they implemented a partially funded system based on fees, and they wanted to have some flexibility in how those fees were assessed. So I think that might be a topic that we could look at as a committee, is just what kinds of things can we do at the local level that would provide some flexibility for school districts as they look at transportation, and how they might be able to do that in a way that will meet the expectations of their constituents. So I'd be happy to try to bring that forward.
The other one of the other subjects that I'm interested in, it would be these multifunction school buses and the weight that going to the 14,000 or 14,000, what the ramifications of that is, and you know, if there are some concerns with licensing issues with that. So I guess I'd maybe like us to meet again before Thanksgiving, if that works with everybody. We can maybe work through our staff and set up a date. And I also want to follow up on, you know, the report that Captain Urquhart will probably hopefully have for us at next time we meet, and then maybe devise a plan of action so we can maybe get some changes, get a bill going or something. Well, with that, I'll adjourn this meeting. Thank you so much.
Good job.
Yeah.
Well.
Okay.
She does make
very good. So, Rick and would you be willing to look at ways to consolidate from a regional perspective?
You talk to Kelly.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that kind of falls in with.
Yeah. 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 Ye